Coming up on this episode of Inside Pop...
Sweet Christmas. Season 2 of Luke Cage is back, and we are going to discuss the first 2 episodes.
Plus, I got all the feels from the new documentary about Mr. Rogers. I'll tell you all about it, and we'll have the big sell. It's back right now on Inside Pop.
Hello, I'm Sean David Johnson, and I'm really proud of the way I say Sweet Christmas.
I'm Amita Patel, and I was equally very impressed by that. And this is Inside Pop, your weekly dive inside the world of pop culture.
We are excited and giddy and pleased with ourselves because we have seen the first 2 episodes of Marvel's Luke Cage, and we're here to talk to you about it. Mita, what was your anticipation level for season 2 of Luke Cage?
Season 2 took a minute to come back, so it's been like, I think my anticipation was like, where did we live off, and what do I want to see? And then once I started watching the episode, I was immediately brought back into, oh yeah, like badass bulletproof black man in Harlem.
Yes, that's Bring what we it. Need.
So I was ready for that again and excited to have Luke Cage on the streets.
And owning them in a way he didn't in season 1, right? I think that
Yeah.
I want to preface by saying that we are going to possibly give some spoilers to the first 2 episodes. So it comes out this Friday. So if you're listening to our episode and want to be spoiler free, you might want to hold off for a couple of days. But if you're coming to us this weekend, join in because you've seen it. Hopefully you're feeling equally passionate about it in a way that we are. And I also want to say that I was a huge Luke Cage fan as a kid. I loved Power Man and Iron Fist, which was the comic where he teamed up with a good Iron Fist in the comic. And but everyone was there. Misty Knight, Colleen Wing were in that comic. And so season 1, I was just beside myself in anticipation.
Yeah, so then what was your feeling? We could just dive right into it now. What were your feelings upon starting season 2, having such high anticipation for season 1 and this character that you love so much from childhood? Do you feel like watching season 2, you had that same excitement, or do you feel like it was different in some way?
Well, I think that there are a lot of things that I love so far about season 2. I would say first and foremost, I was immediately reminded of a conversation we had with Cheo Hadari Coker, who is the showrunner of Luke Cage, and also the showrunner of Southland, which is one of my favorite cop shows. But he, we'll put our interview with him in the show notes. It could be interesting for listeners to go back and check that out. But we interviewed him a couple of years ago now, a year and a half ago. And one of the things he said towards the end of our chat was that we asked him about online response, and he said it was really positive. But the one thing that he had heard from people was that, well, the villains were more interesting than Luke Cage, and people felt that Luke Cage was a little bland or a little old school, and there wasn't much to grab onto. And I can see that, if we want to call it a course correct, immediately. Luke Cage has so much more attitude, so much more humor, allows himself to get angry or doesn't have as much control over his emotions. And so I can just see those little writer's room fingers going, making Luke Cage maybe more flawed, but just more interesting and sexy, if that's possible. Did you pick up on that at all? Did you get that feeling?
Oh yeah. Oh, 100%. This first episode was such a great, you know, when you do a first season and then a long period of time goes by, you know, in network television, sometimes it's like 3 to 6 months, but this was like a year and a half. Mm-hmm. And so a long period of time goes by. Like, how do you try to pick up this character and where do you pick him up and how do you make sure time has passed or not passed? And then also develop that character to show that there's some growth. And I think they did it really well because Luke Cage is now a star, you know, like everybody knows who he is. I think they did some really smart choices of like putting him in a world where he is now known and there is now a Harlem Hero app, you know, like they really made it current in that way. Like, you know, anybody could find this guy, right? Like he's not going to be that typical superhero that can hide and nobody know who he is. Like, I think that's a super interesting storyline that you don't see that often in superhero shows. So I really enjoyed that modern take on this superhero right on our street.
Yeah, and you wonder, like, what would that be like? How would he be treated? And I think the first couple of episodes do that really well. He is a celebrity and gets treated like a celebrity in 2018. And then there's that realistic idea that, well, how is he going to support himself? I know, actually, there's a way that he can make a lot of money. And so he has people in his corner who are coaxing him and helping him to do that. So, and then they talk about rising real estate prices in Harlem and how they're going to have to move the barbershop because of the rent and the insurance. So it's, so it does deal in some realism, but then of course we're talking about a beautiful bulletproof black man. So that's the, you know, the fantasy that we get to indulge in as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And this beautiful bulletproof black man is in love. That's another really great level that they've added to him.
With you.
He is not, stop. No, not at all.
I thought you got cast in season two of Luke Cage.
I have not gotten cast in season two of Luke Cage.
You're not playing Claire Temple?
I'm not Rosario Dawson, and I'm not playing Claire Temple, no.
You guys, I know you're only hearing her voice, but Rosario Dawson and Amita Patel are sisters from another mister.
I would wish, honestly, she is delightful. I've been able to meet her a couple times, and I feel like she sees it too, and I'm just like, we could be sisters. She's like, sure. And I'm like, okay, so let's do it.
Wait, can I tangent, but can I admit one thing to you and the listeners? So, you know, on your iPhone or Android, you can put a picture of the person who you in your contacts. In my phone, I realized the other day that I still have this picture that I took of Amita and Rosario Dawson together, and that's what I use for your little picture, contacts picture.
Oh my god, I love it. Me and my sister.
Ooh, I'll put that in the show notes.
Yeah, we can put that photo in the show notes, especially because you're the one who took it, so that's such a fun memory. We digress. We should go back to Luke Cage being in love with Claire Temple. I love their dynamic. I love this. They're developing her character a lot further and being a girlfriend of a bulletproof man who, you know, big spoilers here. Like, now there seems to be some things that are affecting him a little bit differently. You know, he can fall out of a building and dislocate his shoulder and be in a ton of pain.
Right.
And that's kind of new.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that I actually like their chemistry because I remember in Daredevil, I think the writers and producers were toying with the idea that, at least with sexual tension between Rosario Dawson and Matt Murdock, or I should say Claire Temple and Matt Murdock, and I never really got that chemistry, and it, like, for me, that just felt like, oh, here's another woman pining for Matt Murdock, and she's, like, his little helper, and she's been the little helper for so much of this Marvel series, but I feel real chemistry between the two of them, and they're equals. I mean, they have arguments, and there's a really great argument. I think it came in episode 2. He's mad, he's angry, and he's lashing out. And what do you do when you get angry and lash out at the person you love? Well, if you haven't gone through therapy, you find the weak points and attack those. And that's what Luke Cage did. And I loved the writing of this scene because it felt real. You know, he started accusing her of basically being a superpowers groupie. Right. He's like, you found, you know, it was, you know, with Danny, with Matt, with Jessica, now with me. He's like, what, you know, what's your problem? Like, what, why are you always doing this? And he really kind of lashed out at what might have been a vulnerability, but then she held her own and kind of came right back at him. And I feel like she's the most interesting she's ever been on all of these Marvel series.
Yeah, I don't watch any of the other Marvel series, but I agree. I agree because I feel like we had her in small doses in season one, and I think it's important to show it's another level of Luke Cage fully forming this character, and he's, you know, not just superhero, he's a boyfriend, right? Mm-hmm. He's also a son who is estranged from his father. You know, I think they've introduced some really interesting plot points that will obviously develop further in the season that I'm definitely curious about what they'll do.
Yes. Speaking of chemistry, here's one thing that's troubling me about Luke Cage. The chemistry between the great Alfre Woodard. She is such an amazing, yeah, I'm going to say it, national treasure. Let me use Mimita's phrase. Alfre Woodard's a national treasure. Yeah. But the chemistry between her character, Mariah, and I'm going to call him the big bad. I'm going to call him the medium bad. Diamondback?
No, Shades.
Shades, yeah, Shades.
Yeah.
It's not there. They're supposed to have this. I know their relationship is supposed to kind of creep you out and make you suspicious, but it just feels... Okay, and I'm going to have to ask myself a question. Sean, is it ageism? Are you freaked out because of the age disparity, and especially having an older woman, you know, being super sexual and bedding this younger man? Is that my problem with it? I don't know. Let's unpack this together. How do you feel about it? I'm not sure how I feel.
It's so funny. We didn't discuss what we were going to talk about just specifically about these episodes, but it's fun. That is definitely what I wanted to talk about. I do wonder about the motivations behind that relationship, because I think it is weird to see the older woman, younger man in this way. Mm-hmm. But I feel, after seeing the first two episodes and seeing that relationship, I feel like Mariah's character changed quite a bit. She was this important politician and like very composed and really smart and unfortunately shady. But this Mariah is like a little coy and being, you know, not as strong, I feel, as and powerful as she was in season one. And she's got a different type of power now that could still give her that attitude. But I feel like it's kind of gone.
Yeah. And I feel like it's interesting. It's because she was driven to be a politician, also in the family business. Now she's driven to go legit. She has, I think, a long game in mind. And yeah. So her character's changed for a bit. And listen, we're talking about the first two episodes, so my guess is that the writers have kind of plotted out something. I will say, we get it. There's a Basquiat painting. It's going to play a pivotal role later on.
Yes.
I was like, do not mention that Basquiat painting again. Oh, you mentioned it again. But I think they're planting seeds for stuff that's going to happen later in the episode. And I think that, spoiler alert, a Basquiat painting will play a major role in. But you know what? Shout out again. Remember in season one how, you know, they kept mentioning all these authors like Walter Mosley and Chester Hines, but you know, like all Luke Cage loves to read, and they were just shouting out Black culture nonstop.
Yes.
And I still love that about the show.
Oh yeah, I mean, even just like subtle things, like he was sitting in the barbershop and was reading Ta-Nehisi Coates's book Between the World and Me, right?
Yep.
And then you know, the very first scene, he's wearing an African American College Alliance hoodie. That was, you know, it was their way of saying we're back. Yes, and we're still doing this because it's important and it's awesome. Like, and we don't, it's like, say it loud, I'm black and I'm proud. That's kind of like the theme here, I feel.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great. It's really great. I want to do some like behind the scenes commentary right now. Episode one is directed by Lucy Liu. What now?
Love that. I think she, I'm not sure, but I'm pretty sure that she's directed some episodes of Elementary. And I think she's made a short film.
Can you ask your mom that, since she's a big fan of the show?
Oh my God. My mom will tell you anything you need to know about Elementary, CSI, Criminal Minds, Scorpion.
The CBS collection.
Yes.
Well, yeah, I was just that was like such a great bonus watching the first episode of the season and just seeing her name as the director. I was like, okay, all right, getting some female directors in here, Cheo. I love it. And then obviously there's no way that we could talk about Luke Cage without talking about the music.
Yes.
Adrian Young and Ali Shaheed Muhammad were behind the soundtrack and the score last season. They're back again for this season. I always enjoyed that this show would bring in artists and have like a featured full song performance in their episodes. And then it's back again at the club, Harlem's Paradise. And we got Gary Clark Jr.
Yes.
In one of his episodes. Favorites. I was like, what? That's Gary Clark Jr. That's awesome, you know? So I think that just gives me warmth again. I was like, cool, we're back in this place and we get this great music too, which is a really cool element of the show. I also, in the press notes that we get for getting this access to Luke Cage ahead of time, that, you know, they took a new direction with the music, and the actor who plays Luke Cage, Mike Coulter, actually was really involved with that. And they kind of collaborated on some music. And I guess, you know, Mike had put on a Spotify generated playlist that featured songs in the style of Shabba Ranks, you know, for one of the scenes, which I thought was so interesting. And shout out to Spotify. Like, but
Shabba,
you know, yes. Nice. Nicely done. you know, I think, it's great to see it's such a great collaboration that the creator and star of the show have, and how everybody's really coming together to create this world and feel authentic to Harlem and these characters.
Yeah, and I think we talked about this a little bit last season, that it's Harlem, but it's not Harlem, right? It's definitely a Harlem that I would say is closer to reality than, say, Hell's Kitchen is in Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Iron Fist is closer to reality. That's it, because in the comics, both Harlem and Hell's Kitchen, it was, you know, New York in the 60s, 70s. Hell's Kitchen was called Hell's Kitchen for a reason. You know, Harlem was dealing with a lot of poverty, burnt out buildings, etc. The culture was always there. Now both places have gentrified. Hell's Kitchen, super duper gentrified. So sometimes in Daredevil or Jessica, you know, it's like, oh, we're going down to the docks. There are no more docks. There's Hudson Yards now. You don't have docks in Hell's Kitchen. That's a little south. But Harlem actually, I love how in season two they are, and season one, they're referencing, oh yeah, it's gentrifying, it's going up. But there's still black people walking the streets, and there still is this vibrant culture that they're dealing with in terms of the music and just the visuals and those beautiful warm tones that exist in the show. They go into the nightclub and maybe that's kind of cool and blue, but then they're out on the streets during the daytime and it's like these golden tones that hit. And you know, it's like they, the DPs, the directors, like they're photographing black skin really beautifully, right? Like Mike Holter is, and you know, it's a challenge for the listeners who, I mean, anyone who's kind of been being involved in photography. Like, imagine you're doing a photograph of Mike Holter and Rosario Dawson standing right next to each other, right? Like, those are two different exposures. Right, Mike Holter is really, really, really beautifully dark skinned, and Rosario Dawson is beautifully olive skinned. But they're, I mean, the lighting is great, and they just light for the skin tone so well. Yeah, I mean, you can just tell the artistry that goes into creating this. So, shout out again to that entire production team. You know, one thing I wanted to talk about. I have two more things I want to talk about, Amita. One is high-minded, and one is coming from below the belt. Which would you like to talk about first?
I'm gonna say high-minded first.
Okay, thanks. Watching Luke Cage in a post-Black Panther world.
Ah,
What do you?
yes.
How did? What was like? Did the like phenomenal. Both popularity-wise and artistic Black Panther affect your viewing of Luke Cage at all, positively or negatively?
I mean, now I'm only really putting it together now from you bringing it up. I feel like they live in two separate places for me, and therefore I didn't even kind of make any comparisons. Maybe because it's just like Black Panther's film cinematic and Luke Cage's TV. And then I think I was also maybe just a really giddy that we got to see this stuff before it came out. So I was just like, Yeah, but it's something to think about for sure.
I mean, I think it's, you know, it's. I was just reminded of that that great line dialogue from Master of None season one, where they're talking about there can only be one. You know, where they're talking about Indian actors, it's like, oh, there can only be one.
Yes.
But I think now in 2018, and we spoke a little bit about this with Demaine Davis, the producing director of Queen Sugar, a couple of weeks ago, that we are living now in a world where for African American film and TV, there are multiple. Obviously, we want more and we want that to continue. But I mean, that's pretty cool that we live in a world where we've got our Black superhero on Netflix and our black superhero on the big screen, and actually a few of them,
Yeah.
and that's great. It's little 10-year-old Sean's dream come true.
I mean, yeah, 2018 is shaping up to be 10-year-old Sean's best year
It
ever.
really is. What's good, 10-year-old Sean? You're getting this. Hang in there. It gets better.
It.
Okay, and my below the belt comment. I'm gonna actually try to wrap it in some high mindedness. So, I don't think it's any secret that we both think that Mike Coulter is an attractive man. He's thick with a C. Couple of sex scenes. What did you think of those?
Yeah, I like that they put him back in the bedroom like they did in the first episode of season one. I was like, yes, more of this, please.
It is funny because it's like you talk about, okay, here I'm going to try to like raise it for myself just so I feel good about myself. But seriously, one thing that I will always complain about, like when, you know, like even Amita, when you and I deliver different types of shows and we have to go through standards and practices, and you know, it's like, okay, you can show some violence, but no sex. You can say this curse, but not that curse. And there sometimes there feels like there's a double standard. I mean, Luke Cage, I'll say this, season two, also more violent. There's one scene, maybe when we talk about the villain, there's one scene that I'm just like, wait, did I just see that on TV? That was so violent. But I feel like sometimes people are like, oh yeah, but not too much sex. So I do say that that was a good sex scene. I'm gonna say like, give me even a little bit more. I mean, maybe the actors have a nudity clause, but it's like if you're gonna have that much violence in your Netflix, yeah, like just give me more sex too, because that's something that you have going for you, right? You've got Rosario Dawson and Mike Holter. Let's have a sex scene every other episode.
Yes, please. Thank you. yeah, I completely agree on that front. I'm distracted now thinking about the Luke Cage sex scenes.
I feel like you're Googling pictures of him right now. What are you doing
no,
over there?
I am not. I am not.
What do you lift your hands up? Just kidding.
you're terrible. well, I think we can wrap up our conversation about Luke Cage, because if we continue to talk about it, we're just going to tell you the entire plot of the first two episodes, and you should enjoy it for yourself. Luke Cage is being released on Friday, June 22nd. If you're listening to this on Wednesday or Thursday, you've been spoiled, but hope you enjoy the series. And if you listen to it after June 22nd, I hope you enjoyed this conversation, and tweet us if you have some more thoughts about the second season of Luke Cage. Tweet us at Pop Insiders.
And we'll be right back after these short messages.
You never know who you'll run into in Fairhaven, the city under the bubble.
Allison Becker.
Eliza Skinner.
Keith Powell.
Mucus-drenched imp monsters.
Rob Corddry.
Christelle Alonso.
Judy Greer.
Grotesquely possessive carnivorous plants.
Justin McElroy.
Travis McElroy.
Griffin McElroy.
Terrifying, malevolent, sentient beards.
John Hodgman.
Paul F. Tompkins.
Lisa Loeb.
Bubble, the sci-fi comedy from MaximumFun.org. Just open your podcast app and search for Bubble.
Hey, everybody. Hal Lublin and Mark Gagliardi from We Got This here to talk about our upcoming live shows.
Why don't you tell everybody the details about our show in Philadelphia?
Sure. Here's what you're going to do. You're going to go down to Philadelphia Improv Theater, okay? I'm going to do it on Saturday, June 23rd, okay? There are two shows. One is 5 o'clock show. There's an 8 o'clock show. At 8 o'clock show, you can get a VIP ticket and hang out with us at 7 p.m. for like a whole hour. We'll sign something for you. You can hang out. You can talk to us. And then come see a show. Both shows are going to be completely different, though.
Both shows?
Both shows are going
to
be different.
Here's I sounded like a British actor trying to do a Philadelphia accent.
Yeah. You can look up Philadelphia Podcast Festival. You can look that up and get tickets there. Or you can go to Philadelphia Improv Theater, to the FIT Theater, P-H-I-T, and you can get tickets there, or you can just go direct at bit.ly/WeGotPhilly2018. That's WEGOTPHILLY 2018.
Welcome back to Inside Pop.
I had to take a second to discuss a documentary I saw a little while ago called Won't You Be My Neighbor? And it is, if you know that phrase, you know what I'm talking about. It is a documentary about another national treasure, Fred Rogers. The documentary is directed by Morgan Neville. I don't know if people know him, but he won an Oscar for his documentary 20 Feet from Stardom, which both Sean and I actually got to watch together and really enjoyed. It kind of chronicles the lives of some of the most famous backup singers to some of the biggest bands in music, and it was a beautiful documentary and super insider piece that I'm super proud of. Is the DP, director of photography, of 20 Feet from Stardom was, we had worked with him that year that the documentary come out, and we were super excited that documentary won an Oscar. And then he is also the director of photography for Mr. Rogers' doc, Won't You Be My Neighbor? So I was also just uber proud. This man, his name is Graham Willoughby. He's extremely talented as a DP. But this documentary, guys, if you watched Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, if you even saw two episodes, you should really just watch this documentary. I cannot tell you how much it brought back so much of the nostalgia of that show. I grew up watching this show. I don't remember a lot of, you know, the episodes specifically, but Morgan Neville put together such an incredible documentary, really giving us a glimpse into who Fred Rogers was. But it had some incredible themes that are relevant now. And I mean, there's this one moment where King Friday says, "I want to build a wall."
Oh my gosh. And
they make this parallel, you know, and the whole audience was like, "Oh my gosh," you know, and, you know, I think Fred Rogers was such a kind and generous person from his core. And you really get that feeling from the first thing that you see. They had 100% access to the Fred Rogers Center. They went through hundreds of episodes of Mr. Rogers Neighborhoods, and you see a lot of them in here. There's these incredible intimate interviews with a young Fred Rogers, you know, like right when he started, you know, doing the show, and a little bit before that, I believe, about how he feels like, you know, getting to know children is so important and being able to teach them things. You know, I mean, there's things that I even forgot about the show. He had theme weeks on such really, you know, hard topics to discuss with kids: divorce, death, poverty, war. You know, it brought me to tears. There were so many beautiful moments in here. And I have to say, if you can get a chance to see Won't You Be My Neighbor, I cannot tell you how much you will need like two boxes of tissues, but you're going to feel like I've been saying these last couple of weeks about just putting out good into the world. This man did this for decades. And there was a Q&A with the director and producers afterwards. And I think people are feeling like something like that is missing right now in children's television. And when you see this documentary, you're like, we need more of this. You know, I think it was unanimous in that audience, how incredible this man was.
That sounds amazing. I was a huge, huge, huge Mr. Rogers watcher when I was a little kid. This is maybe 8-year-old Sean, but I used to pretend that I was his co-host. I did that with Mike Douglas, and then I also did it with Mr. Rogers. So I would actually stand in front of my TV and it's like, yeah, let's go see Charlie now. And like, I would just kind of walk around with him in his apartment because I don't know if that exists on TV now, maybe on Sesame Street on HBO, but I think just by his mere presence and the way he spoke, I think he taught you patience and attentiveness and such a smart, gentle spirit. And I'm glad that there's a documentary that's been so well done. So I'm definitely going to put this on my list. This isn't quite a big sell, but it is it's a big sell, but it's not an official big sell from you. Because it's my turn to big sell.
Yes. And it's more of a big sell to everyone.
Yeah.
I think, you know, they touch upon so much in this, like and I feel like Morgan did a really good job of being fair as well. As much as he had the access to the entire archive and interviewed his wife and people who worked on his staff and friends and family, you know, he also made sure that he talked about how certain, you know, there were certain critics about the show. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was this whole moment about how, you know, Mr. Rogers would say everybody is special. And then there was like this huge outcry of like, the reason why the youth today feel entitled is because they all were special. They were all told they were special by Mr. Rogers. You know, like eye rolls like left and right, obviously. But, you know, they went there. They discussed that.
Well, no, because I'm Gen X and we are like the opposite, right? Like we've got to read 20 self-help books to help ourselves. And we have to watch Oprah Super Soul Sunday every week to, you know, to get that in our heads. And we watch Mr. Rogers too. So I would say boo to that critique.
But it was a thing. It had been in the news and he had, you know, they have some really great interview where he kind of defines what that means. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he talks about his struggle. He was a minister, his struggle to accept somebody who was gay and then getting through that brought me to tears. And you know, somebody he worked with who was gay. And so but then he did love and accept that coworker. And That was amazing. And, you know, even him doing what he could to address race in his show. There's so much that Mr. Rogers did in all these hundreds of episodes of his show. And this documentary also, they got so much behind the scenes of how they put together the, you know.
Oh, see, I'm there for that.
It's so cool how much. I was like, I don't understand how, and it looks amazing. Like, it's so crisp. And, you know, you're just like, my gosh, you feel like you're on that set. It's... Yeah.
Okay, I'm definitely there for the behind the scenes stuff.
Please see this documentary.
Because I'm finally willing to believe that there is actually not a kingdom where King Friday is the ruler. So I'm finally at the point where I can admit that maybe that's fantasy. Well, thank you, Amita, for that recommendation. And why don't we just segue into the big sell right now?
Sure. Yes. For those of you who don't know, I just did a very nice big sell. But the big sell is when one of us is enjoying something in pop culture and shares it with the other and tells them to check it out, absorb it, and come back and give a rating and review the following week.
Last week, we had a special big sell and we just big sold a bunch of queer pop culture that we enjoyed. And so we went a little... out of format for Pride Month. It's still Pride Month, but we're going to get back into formation now. And it's my turn to big sell. So, yes. So I am going to big sell to you an article because I feel like this story happened and I just missed out on it. I don't know what I was doing, but...
working like really, really hard. No,
right. But so basically, have you heard about Kelly Marie Tran, the actress from Star Wars, The Last Jedi?
Yeah.
Okay. And have you heard that she was essentially bullied off of Instagram?
No.
So sadly, it's another, we do need Mr. Rogers now. There's a segue because basically these kind of intense fanboys had bullied her off of Instagram. Really ugly, dirty, racist, misogynistic, body shaming tweets towards her. So basically they took their anger towards the fact that The Last Jedi wasn't everything they needed it to be and put it on her. Like basically the way that a lot of them were upset that John Boyega, a black man, was cast in Force Awakens, and that Daisy Ridley was the star of Force Awakens. So they were so angry about The Last Jedi that they tormented Kelly Marie Tran, and she left. She left Instagram. The director of Last Jedi has kind of gone onto Twitter, and he started kind of bashing back. But it's kind of disheartening, but also like... But honestly, I'm a huge pop culture fan, a huge fan of nerdy pop culture. I get so into it. I've been rewatching Sense8 season one. I'm ridiculous in a beautiful way, but I would never like try to hurt an actor because they're in something that I didn't like or that I felt like betrayed the sanctity of pop culture I love. Anyway, I couldn't wrap my head around it, but there's a really good article, and that's what I'm big selling to you. He's definitely one of my favorite comic book writers. His name is Abraham Reisman, sorry for the mispronunciation. And he wrote an article on Vulture.com called "We Can't Trust Hollywood to Fix Toxic Fandom." And it explores, I think it's interesting. I chose it because I felt like it did in some way segue from our Luke Cage conversation. It's about superheroes and fantastical movies. And he does this really interesting exploration of fans of comic books and comic book movies, Marvel, Disney. So it's interesting. And I thought you would find it interesting because it definitely touches on, I know, a couple of major concerns and issues and beliefs that you have.
Yeah. Oh, this sounds so interesting. I am very curious to read this article. And just shout out to Kelly Marie Tran. So sorry that you had to go through that. But there are definitely people here who would love to see you back on Instagram. Two right here on this podcast.
Right on. We only leave positive comments.
That's on right.
Everything.
except for Kanye. Okay, sorry. Right. We're not going back there. Yeah, thank you for this wonderful big sell. I always love when we change it up and it's a nice little article or thought piece.
The wonderful TED Talk that got 4 stars last
week,
2 weeks ago. So yes. That was great. So yeah, so I'll put the link for that in the show notes. Happy summer, by the way.
Yes, first day of summer, first guys. Day of summer,
let's do it up for the summer.
Yes, I feel like we've had small doses of summer all for the last 2 months, but
yeah, two days.
Ready. I'm ready. Yes, I'm ready to just get rid of all of the boots and the closed-toed shoes, and it's all toes, all sandals, all the time. That's when I really know it's summer.
Right. I approve.
Thanks. All right. Well, that's it for us this week. But please stay in touch. You know what we're going to say. Get on Twitter. Go on Instagram. Follow us. Comment. Leave us tweets at Pop Insiders. Let us know what you think of Luke Cage. If you've seen Won't You Be My Neighbor, tell me how much you cried. And obviously, give us a big sell if you have one.
Shout out to some of my colleagues and members of the My House cast who a few weeks ago did a lot of liking and retweeting of our episode where we discussed the show. So completely self-serving on their point, but also I appreciate their unity and support. So shout out to a bunch of those folk. And you can also go to MaximumFun.org. We are part of that wonderful podcast network, and we exist there alongside of a lot of other great podcasts about both culture and comedy.
We are also still waiting for you guys to give us some suggestions on what to put in our About Us section on InsidePopPodcast.com. Please send those suggestions promptly.
Skincare regimen, you know, guilty pleasures. We'll share almost anything. Okay.
Sure. Almost.
But until then, we want everyone to have a great week. We will be back next week with another amazing episode, I don't humbly say, filled with the best of music, TV, movies, and comic books.
And dinosaurs. Jurassic World, y'all!
And hopefully no heels that run away from dinosaurs. All right, everyone, have a great week.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.